Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this Honorable Court.
Thank you. Please be seated. This morning, the court has two matters on its oral submission docket. They are Texas Department of Transportation versus Eddie Needham from Travis County in the 3rd Appellate District, and Nathan Dale Campbell versus the State of Texas from Harris County in the 14th Appellate District. In each of these matters, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. Petitioners may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. We will take a brief recess in between the two arguments and, of course, complete the arguments before noon. Justice O'Neill is not here today, but she will participate, I believe, in the deliberation and decision of both of these cases. These arguments are being recorded by the court, and you may purchase a tape of either argument from our clerk for a nominal fee. We're ready to hear from petitioner in Department of Transportation versus Needham.
May it please the court. Mr. Leyenberger will present argument for petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Section 554.002B of the Texas Whistleblower Act defines, in plain English, who is an appropriate law enforcement authority for receiving a report of a violation of law. Despite its clear and unambiguous meaning, the Austin Court of Appeals rewrote this definition. And in doing so, the court went down the primrose path of legislating from the bench. Had the court simply stuck to the statutory definition, however, it would have been compelled to hold as a matter of law that the department is not an appropriate law enforcement authority under the facts of this case.
That's not really the issue, whether the department is or is not. It's what the employer in good faith believes.
Your Honor, that indeed is one of the requirements of the statute. If the employee had a good faith belief that the entity to whom he reported was authorized to regulate or enforce under the law alleged to be violated in the report, or was authorized to investigate or prosecute under the criminal laws. To simply say that all that we need to look at here is the good faith requirement and ignore specific terms that the legislature used to define the term appropriate law enforcement authority would essentially render meaningless what the legislature did in 1995 in specifically amending the act to specifically define the term appropriate law
Don't
enforcement
we have
authority.
To look at that definition through the prism of judging the employee's good faith belief.
I believe that is correct, Your Honor.
So but our position approach the argument that way.
Well,
before you do that, is it your argument then that in order to determine whether the employee had a good faith belief, we first have to determine whether TxDOT is in fact an appropriate law enforcement agency under this set of facts?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And then having done that, whichever way, then whether his or her actions or understandings will meet a good faith test.
Absolutely.
Whether it is or not. Is that
Absolutely,
right?
Your Honor. We believe it would be begging the question to start off by assuming that Mr. Needham's position, that he had a good faith belief that TxDOT was an appropriate law enforcement authority because he believed they could inherently discipline their employees for violating internal policies and rules. That assumes the fact that that needs to be proven here, which is that the legislature intended an inherent power to discipline to be one of the categories of things that categorize an appropriate law enforcement authority. So yes, the very first thing we must do is look at the statutory language and decide if the legislature intended an inherent power to discipline to be one of the things that categorizes an appropriate law enforcement authority. And here, we would submit that the plain and unambiguous meaning of the words used by the legislature does not admit of any construction. that would allow for an inherent power to discipline to be a characteristic of an appropriate law enforcement authority.
If the complaint was to, in fact, a law enforcement authority, then why would, and the nature of the complaint was a whistleblower complaint, then what's the value of the good faith belief? What is it we're supposed to have a good faith about if we're making a whistleblower complaint and we made it to law enforcement authority?
Well, first of all, the question assumes that the whistleblower is reporting to an appropriate law enforcement authority. We submit in this case that for purposes of the DWI laws of Texas, that Department of Transportation cannot, in any reasonable construction, be considered.
Maybe I wasn't clear. I'll go with you that the Department of Transportation is not an appropriate law enforcement authority. What I'm saying is, if that ends the inquiry, if you just didn't do it, does the reverse apply? Meaning, if TxDOT was in fact an appropriate law enforcement authority and he made the report, what would be the value of this notion of good faith report? I mean, how does that play into this? I make my report, I do a law enforcement agency, then what does the requirement of good faith mean?
If I'm understanding your Honor's question correctly, I think what the good faith requirement means, if we look at the structure of the Act and also take a look at what the legislature had in mind when they were defining the term appropriate law enforcement authority, I think what they were trying to do is prevent a situation where a potential whistleblower is confronted with more than one reasonable choice as to whom to report. And if confronted with two reasonable choices, the whistleblower just happens to choose the wrong one, chooses the entity that did not have authority to regulate or enforce, investigate, or prosecute the law, then the whistleblower should not be denied protection. But that's different from this case. This case, you do not have a situation where someone is confronted with two reasonable choices and then just chose wrong. Here is just objectively unreasonable that someone would assume that the Texas Department of Transportation is an appropriate law enforcement authority for purposes of enforcing the DWI laws.
Would that be true of everybody, or does it depend on Mr. Needham's background? That is, he was an employee of this agency.
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that although this good faith element in the 002B has not been specifically defined, the court has defined the good faith element as far as to 002A, which talks about a good faith report of a violation of law. In Wichita County versus Hart, this court said that there needed to be, in determining good faith, subjective good faith and objective good faith, and that objective good faith is judged by the standard of what that employee would have, an employee with that person's training and experience would have believed. So yes, we think, although the court hasn't specifically held that with regard to this provision, we think that the Wichita County versus Hart test would be an appropriate test.
Sometimes I've seen one of these TxDOT cars or trucks with the lights on top, and I've slowed my speed.
You were spooked, Your Honor.
I'm trying to get at the question of whether this is an agency that somebody might think was appropriate, but not somebody who had worked there and presumably was familiar with the scope of its responsibility.
That would be our position, Your Honor, that perhaps there is some poor soul out there that would think that TxDOT could stop them and arrest them and prosecute them for DWI. But in this case, where you had a 23-year employee of the Texas Department of Transportation, and based on his training experience, you couldn't say that he would reasonably believe.
Does TxDOT have any responsibility for regulation of trucking or anything like that? I mean, do they do any investigation of overweight trucks, or do they do any investigation of, I don't know, I suppose, vandalism on bridges or they have any sort of responsibility like that?
I'm going to have to answer Your Honor's question by saying I don't have specific knowledge of the items that you refer to, although in my brief I did set out a list of the things that the Texas Transportation Commission is, Texas Transportation Commission is empowered to see to it that the TxDOT does things like planning, constructing, and maintaining the highway system, developing a statewide transportation plan, awarding contracts for improving the highway system, assisting in the development of mass transportation, and the list goes on. And looking at the list here, there does seem to be one for regulating motor carriers.
I was curious if, to take the opposite of the question that the Chief just asked you, if I work for the Department of Transportation and I'm aware the Department of Transportation does have some enforcement authority in transportation issues, does that then bring the Department of Transportation within the ambit of one of those reasonable choices? Now, let me start over.
Sure.
You've been very careful in the briefing and in your argument to say, in this case, under these facts, he should have known that they weren't the appropriate law enforcement authority for DWI, which to me is just compelling my question to you. Well, does that mean that our decision on good faith determines the specifics of what it is the agency is entitled to enforce, or is it a much more general category? Does it assume, well, you report to the Sheriff's Department as opposed to the Police Department, and one or the other has jurisdiction, you report to the FBI as opposed to the Department of Public Safety, or if the department has some enforcement authority somewhere, would they fit within your ambit of kind of a reasonable choice?
I don't think we can lay down a categorical rule here. I think where I would go as the touchstone is the language of the statute. And the statute says, does the whistleblower have a good faith belief that the entity to whom he's reporting is authorized to regulate under or enforce the law alleged to be violated in the report? So we'd have to look at what the law that has been alleged to be violated to answer the question of whether or not someone could reasonably believe that TxDOT would be imbued with authority to enforce that law. The other aspect of it is investigate or prosecute a violation of criminal law. So right there, I mean, if we're talking about a criminal law, TxDOT just not in the business of investigating or prosecuting violations of criminal law. So I hope that answers Your Honor's question.
Well, I'm exploring it.
Okay. As Justice Baker was saying, we believe that the first step in this case is for determining whether the Court of Appeals misinterpreted this statute. We say that the Court of Appeals did, because the Court of Appeals added a third category to the statute that's not there. The statute should have simply been applied as it was written, and if the court had done that, then it would have been bound to enforce the statute according to its express terms. Because the statute was unambiguous, there was simply nothing there for the Court of Appeals to interpret. We would also say that the court went wrong in looking at pre-1995 amendment cases. The court specifically relied on the Moreau case to come up with its power to discipline category. When the legislature amended the act in 1995, the legislature should be presumed to be well aware of the cases that were out there that was defining the then previously undefined term appropriate law enforcement authority. And the legislature could have adopted what the common law had held to be an appropriate law enforcement authority, but that is not what it did. What it did was enact a more limited and stricter definition. Yes, there is the good faith requirement that is added to somewhat ameliorate the strictness of the standard in the statute. And if you look at the legislative history, you can see that is indeed what the legislature had in mind. We want a strict definition, but we're going to temper it somewhat with the good faith requirement. So there was this delicate balancing that we believe that the legislature was doing. We'd like to quickly mention a second point that we've raised in this case, and that is one that has to do with causation here. We believe that even if the court were disinclined to agree with the department on the issue of statutory construction, the department should still prevail in this case because Mr. Needham's evidence of causation was legally insufficient. We believe that the evidence was legally insufficient because at the time the department, the ultimate decision maker in the department, decided to initiate the disciplinary process against Mr. Needham, the ultimate decision maker did not have knowledge of the reported violation of law.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court. Mr. Robinette will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. First, I brought a poster I'd like to put before the court. Now, this poster is nothing new. It's not any new information. It's simply the statute. And we've also provided the court with a copy of the statute as a handout. And we're proud of that statute because what we're asserting and what we're asking the court to do is apply the statute as it's written. We agree with the words that were stated by TxDOT that this statute is unambiguous. It is clearly written. And the point of disagreement is the assertion that the Court of Appeals somehow rewrote this statute. What TxDOT is asking this court to do is rewrite the statute by taking an X-Acto knife to it and cutting out the provision about that says the employee in good faith believes. In other words, the department wants this statute to be read as clearly an objective standard so that it's a report is to an appropriate law enforcement authority only if it's made to an entity that is authorized to regulate under or enforce the law alleged or investigate or prosecute a violation of criminal law without regard to what the employee in good faith believes the case.
Now, what constitutes good faith?
Well,
if I work at Taco Bell and I report to my supervisor, someone who appears to be some employee who's driving across the parking lot drunk, that's my supervisor. Is that in good faith? I believe it. I believe my employer has the right to do something here.
Well, we agree with TxDOT to an extent, and we stated this in our brief, that there is both a subjective and an objective element. In this case, we don't believe that there's any assertion that Mr. Needham did not have a subjective good faith belief.
Would you argue that or agree that maybe the good faith test articulated in Hart should be adopted for this inquiry too?
We addressed the good faith inquiry in Hart in our brief, and we believe that under that good faith test that Mr. Needham met that test.
Well, I understand that, so I guess you could answer my question, yes.
Well, as a matter of academic thought, I don't know that I would agree with that. I don't know that the same objective good faith test should be applied. I don't believe that as stringent a test in theory should be applied to the question of whether the correct law enforcement authority or an appropriate law enforcement authority.
Do you have another good faith test you think should be applied?
Well, the test that I believe should be applied is consistent with what happened in this case, and that is that the...
Well, but I don't think we want a test that just applies to one case.
Well, I believe it applies to every case, but it is applicable to this case.
Well, I understand. Tell me what you think it is, and then we'll see if it applies.
And that is that the authority to whom the report is made is one that has authority over the matter being reported, and they have that authority because this particular entity has a legitimate interest in the matter, or there's a rational relationship between the matter being reported and the entity. For example,
seems like that would be every supervisor in a government position.
Depending on what was being alleged. For example,
well, to take DWI, what state agency that employs personnel wouldn't care that a low-level employee or anybody employee was driving while intoxicated? And if you reported it to a supervisor, wouldn't worry that if he does this on the job, the government's going to be in trouble?
Well, that is correct. As long as it's done on the job with the entity's vehicle, the entity has a legitimate interest in regulating the employee's conduct in that regard and in investigating any allegations that the employee has violated that law.
So you agree that your test would include virtually any employee, at least a supervisory employee, in the same agency, the same governmental agency?
If it was something that, yes, I would agree that it would cover a report made about an employee in that agency. For example, if Mr. Needham had noticed an employee of the Department of Agriculture and complained about that person driving while intoxicated to his supervisor, the supervisor of the Department of Transportation would have no legitimate interest in that matter, would not have a legitimate interest in regulating or investigating it, would only have an interest in passing that information along.
Well, isn't that the same case here?
No, in this case, Mr. Needham reported an employee within the Department of Transportation. And the Department of Transportation...
Well, I mean the part when you said would have the necessity to pass it on to somebody who could prosecute.
I don't believe that's the case. The Department of Agriculture has an obligation, not just an interest, but an obligation and a duty, not just the authority, to regulate its own employees to prevent them.
But that's the same thing that you argued for TxDOT in this case, isn't it?
Well, yes.
What bothers me is, on page 16 of your brief, you said that TxDOT would simply investigate for its own internal disciplinary process or to forward to another entity for prosecution. And that sounds like you recognize that under the facts of this case that the employer doesn't have the authority to regulate, enforce, investigate, or actually prosecute the violation of a DWI.
Well, then I didn't write that very clearly, if that was what you...
Well, you said it again on page 18, so maybe you thought it was a pretty good statement.
No, I agree that any one of these authorities has the right and the duty to pass it along as well, but they also have the right to regulate.
Why would they have to pass it on under these circumstances?
Why would they have to pass it on?
If they can do all that you say they can do, why do they have to pass it to some other entity?
I'm not contending that they would have to pass it along. They would certainly have the right to pass it along.
Well, assume that Mr. Needham said that not only do I believe, as I said, that he was driving while intoxicated, Mr. Hope, but I want to have him charged with that offense because it's a dangerous circumstance.
Well, at that point, the person within TxDOT could report that himself. They could say, Mr. Needham, if you want that charge brought by another department or another authority, you take it there.
Okay.
But TxDOT has an obligation to the public to regulate that conduct, to investigate that type of conduct, both to protect the public from possible physical injury by a drunken driver, and to protect itself and the taxpayers from something that it would be liable for under the Texas Tort Claims Act.
Well, let me ask you then, based on that statement, what about the basis upon which the Court of Appeals decided this issue. As I read it, they relied solely on Moreau and relied solely on a statement that because TxDOT has the power to discipline an employee, that that is what qualifies TxDOT as an appropriate law enforcement agency. Well, and they relied on Moreau to say that.
That is consistent with the statute as written.
But
it is
do
amend-
we have a problem that Moreau was decided before the amendment? And it obviously could not have relied on this definition to have reached this decision in Moreau.
Well, first of all, whether the Court of Appeals relied on Moreau or the statute as written doesn't make any difference. The Court of Appeals got it right. Secondly, you have to assume that the statute was intended to change Moreau. I do not see anything in the statute that changes Moreau. The statute, when it was originally offered to the legislature, as covered in the petitioner's brief, the sponsors of that amendment did have an intention to change the case law up to that point, and their intention was to make it entirely objective. But that attempt failed. That attempt was rejected by the legislature.
Well, as I understand, the In Good Faith Beliefs was added on the floor.
That's correct, and that took it took the law basically back to the status that it had prior to 1995. It was basically an incorporation of the case law to that point
well,
into the statute.
Would you agree or disagree that even with the good faith, what that person has to in good faith believe is either something under one or two of the definition, and can we or should we enlarge what that says?
Well,
the reason for that question is the Court of Appeals decided this solely on the right to discipline, and that word does not appear in the definition if you want to go on a plain meaning.
Well, again, the question is whether the Court of Appeal got the decision right. The Court of Appeal got the decision right under the language of the statute.
We do ordinarily look to see if there's a cogent or rational basis in their analysis to reach the conclusion that they did.
Well, my belief is that there was a cogent and rational basis because the authority has the right to discipline because it has a regulation prohibiting that conduct. It has the right to discipline after it investigates the conduct and determines that the conduct occurred. That's what leads to the right to discipline.
TxDOT says in its briefing that the evidence is undisputed that your client never intended for there to be a prosecution. He was just trying to make the agency safer, as it were. In this good faith, can you read in that there must actually be an intent to whistleblow in terms of leading to some action by a government authority that can that's an appropriate law enforcement?
Now, the issue in this case is whether the whether he believes that the entity he reports to has the authority to regulate and investigate without
regard.
So
you don't think it has to, that the whistleblower has to ever intend or that the agency has to have the power to initiate a prosecution. It's just if they can regulate or investigate what happened.
Well, that's correct. That's why it says regulate under or enforce. That's why it says investigate or prosecute. It doesn't say regulate and enforce. It doesn't say investigate and prosecute. It says you do one of those four things, you're an appropriate law enforcement authority. Mr. Needham felt that this authority, the TxDOT, could regulate under the DUI statutes to control the conduct of its own employees, not the conduct of other employees, but the conduct of its own employees, and that if it received a report of improper conduct under that statute, it could investigate it and take whatever action it deemed appropriate, whether that included reporting the matter to another authority or not. It could still investigate it, and it has an obligation to do those things. Just
so you don't have to hope or want that anything criminal will come out of this. You have to hope or desire that the conduct will cease or will be altered as a result of your report and your whistleblower.
I'm not even sure that that's required. What's required is merely the making of a report of unlawful conduct.
You can be happy with it.
You can make the report and then it's the job of the agency to do with it as it will. And many people are satisfied with that, just as if someone saw a crime committed, a mugging on the street, go report that to the nearest police officer. And whether that person is hoping for prosecution or not, they have done the right thing in reporting it and letting the law enforcement authority then do whatever it thinks is appropriate as far as regulating and investigating and prosecuting.
Must the adverse employment reaction be caused by that report?
I don't believe so. I think that what is necessary, that the whistleblower is a whistleblower when he makes the report. It doesn't make any difference what happens after the report is made. There's nothing in the statute that suggests that.
So a report is made, and then an employment action is taken, and you're saying it doesn't matter that the employer knew nothing about the report, that if the adverse action is taken, then there is liability under this statute?
No, 100%. I'm sorry, I missed your point. It is important. I thought you were asking about whether adverse action was taken against the person who had committed the act that was reported. No, there must be an adverse action taken against the employee who makes the report, and it must occur when it did, under this court's language, because of the report. It would not have occurred except for the report.
What's the evidence that that happened here?
Well, the evidence in this case, that there's a no evidence point, and this court set forth in Zimlich, which I think is how you pronounce it, what the court does in a no evidence point, which is first, it considers only the evidence in favor of the jury's verdict and disregards all contrary evidence, and that it allows circumstantial evidence to establish the causal link, and it sets forth five factors that the evidence may include. These are not necessarily exhaustive factors, but it does set forth five factors, and Mr. Needham met four of them. Knowledge of the report of illegal conduct. In this case, regardless of what the department is saying, Ms. Skeen, the person who made the ultimate decision to discipline Mr. Needham, knew of Mr. Needham's report 11 days before she took any action.
She had started an investigation before.
She had begun the investigation, but she was only investigating. She had not made any decision until 11 days after she learned that Mr. Needham had made his report. The jury concluded, based on the evidence, that because she knew of the report, she took harsher action than she otherwise would have. And that was supported by the failure of the department to adhere to established company policies regarding employment decisions, one of the factors in Zimlich, primarily that it did not follow the progressive discipline policy of beginning with advising Mr. Needham of his purported deficiencies, counseling with him, giving him an opportunity to improve. It simply came in on March 18th and brought the axe down on him.
Well, I know how the jury decided this case, but couldn't you also draw inferences that none of those things could be causation based on the report? They're all based on another reason why
the jury could have found against Mr. Newman, yes, but it didn't.
I understand that. I mean, that's not the only inference that can be made from those things.
No, that's correct. There was also evidence in the record of discriminatory treatment, that is, that Mr. Needham was treated differently than other employees who had committed similar acts.
But that's not based on the report. Well, the adverse employment activity, whatever it is, have to be found to be based on making the report?
That's correct, and certain of the factors the jury considers in determining whether the report was related to it is whether...
Well, what evidence is there that you say supports the inference that the adverse employment was based on the report? And
well,
where can we find it?
A, she knew about the report before making her decision. B, she treated Mr. Needham differently than the policy would require, which is an indication of bad faith. The policy would have required her to call Mr. Needham in and say, Mr. Needham, we've had these complaints.
Well, but she doesn't have to have any faith one way or the other. It's his viewpoint on the statute.
Not on the causation factor. The jury has to believe that his report caused her to discipline him more harshly.
You just quoted what it was from Hines, and that is the adverse employment action would not have been taken but for the fact of the report.
That's correct, and that can be established by circumstantial evidence, which includes factors such as not following the policy, treating Mr. Needham more harshly than other people who allegedly committed the same violations, or the fact that there was little or no evidence to support any of the allegations against Mr. Needham. In fact, Mr. Needham denied all of the allegations except one, which was enough evidence in and of itself for the jury to conclude that he had not committed them and that this was a retaliatory effort, not a good faith disciplinary action. So there is an abundance of evidence in the record to support the conclusion that the jurors came to, which is that Mr. Needham's report was the cause of the discriminatory action taken against him when it was taken against him.
Let me go through this statute one more time. And let's suppose one of our employees reports to the court that another employee has been driving under the influence while delivering court documents to the United States Mail. So that it's clear it's an on-the-job activity. What is our power to regulate under the DWR? We clearly have no power to enforce the DWR law. What's our power to regulate under it?
You have the power to adopt rules when your employees come in to work for the court, especially employees who are going to drive for the court, that those employees shall not drive under the influence of alcohol as defined by Chapter 49 of the Penal Code. That's a regulation. If you receive a report that one of your employees did, in fact, drive under the influence of alcohol while on duty with the court vehicle, then you would have the obligation, not just the authority, but the obligation to investigate that and find out if that really was happening on your watch.
That's true. You believe, then, of every criminal statute, every state agency has the authority to make regulations thereunder and the obligation to make an investigation.
If it is something that's rationally related to what the agency is doing, if the agency is not sending anyone out in any vehicles, then it might not be rationally related to that agency's authority to say, we will get you for driving under the influence while you're not on agency business. Let me give you another example.
But if the legislature wanted broad supervisory power to be turned over to, I mean, what, if they wanted whistleblower to apply to supervisors, why wouldn't they have just said that?
Well, the converse of that is why would they have said it when that's what that was the status of the law at the time, and nothing in the amendments they made specifically changed that. Why wouldn't they specifically say this is no longer the law? And let me give you one final example. I do a lot of work with school districts. School districts, like other authorities, have certain inherent authorities to regulate their employees. For example, to tell their teachers, don't engage in any sexual conduct with students. Now, if a complaint is brought that a teacher is engaging in sexual conduct with a minor student, does the district have the authority to regulate that? Does it have the authority to investigate it? Or do they simply have to turn a deaf ear and say, we didn't hear it? You need to take that to another agency. You need to report it to someone else, or we'll report it to you. The fact of the matter is that school districts routinely investigate those allegations, and they investigate them thoroughly.
Well, that's just what a reasonable employer ought to do.
Because they have the authority to do it.
So why wouldn't the statute, if I was sitting in the legislative house and I'd say, well, let's talk about whistleblower. What's whistleblower? Every employer has the authority to regulate improper employee conduct while they're on the job. I can't imagine anybody would say they didn't have the authority to regulate improper conduct on the job. You could fire them. Why wouldn't they say a report to the employer or to an appropriate law enforcement authority would protect them from retaliation? Why wouldn't they just say that as opposed to going through this whole thing about sort of a good faith belief of a right to regulate under the law or be a law enforcement authority? I mean, what you're telling me is all you got to do is just say, if you report it to your supervisor, you report it to an appropriate law enforcement authority, you're protected. And this doesn't say that.
Well, if it's a report to the employer in a matter that the employer has a legitimate and compelling interest in fact, I keep using the word obligation, it's not simply any improper conduct. It has to be a violation of the law. But that's covered in subsection A. But it also has to be a violation of law that this employer has a legitimate interest in controlling.
So all employers then are law enforcement authorities?
To an extent.
Everyone, for every, so anytime there's a violation, this statute was meant to cover all employers in all contexts, so long as anything the employee was doing had some relationship with the job. That's a pretty expansive reading of the statute.
Well, to read it any other way is to restrict the statute. What the department wants to do, in addition to remove the good faith requirement, is add the words, is authorized by statute. In other words, they're asking you to look through the law and say, well, the drunk chapter 49 of the Penal Code, does it say that what authorities are can pass regulations and investigate under that provision? No, it doesn't. If the legislature had wanted to restrict reports to entities that are specifically authorized by the words of the statute, then why didn't it include those entities in the statute? Why didn't it say? Or enforce the law that the employee in good faith believes is authorized by a statute. It just simply says authorized. The question is, what does the word authorized mean? You can receive authorization from the Constitution, from statutes, or by inherent authorities based on the function of the particular entity in question.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Mr. Needham would have this court read the good faith requirement as only being a subjective good faith belief. We think that that would just be bad policy, and for the reasons...
He's made a totally objective argument that the Supreme Court of Texas can regulate under the DWI law and can investigate. What's wrong with that?
We disagree with that. We disagree with that because the statute specifically says that the entity must be authorized to regulate under or enforce the law alleged to be violated in the report. The word law is defined in the Whistleblower Act under Section 554.0011. Law means a state or federal statute, a local ordinance, or a rule adopted under a statute or ordinance. So simply saying, well, just because the Supreme Court can generate its own internal policies, rules, guidelines to control its employees and their conduct at work, that does not comport with the definition of law that's in the whistleblower statute. And that's precisely what they're trying to do. They're trying to do the same thing that the Court of Appeals did here.
Why aren't we authorized to investigate allegation of DWI?
Because investigate is very specific. It's investigate a violation of criminal law. This court is not authorized to go about investigating violations of criminal law. I think that the statute is very clear, and we also think that it's clear that the legislature didn't intend that result. They intended for people to report violations of law to authorities who are steeped in that law, understand that law, qualified to investigate and bring prosecutions.
Why is it good public policy to say that if one of our employees thinks another employee is doing something wrong, that the best thing to do is to run over to the district attorney rather than to come up through the agency and see and investigate there if there's a problem? I mean, why? I assume that we all agree on why they want a whistleblower statute is to bring out more, to keep people from being punished for finding government corruption. And why is it good public policy to say you've got to go first outside your agency? And if you don't, I mean, if we can fire you before you get over to the district attorney, then you're out of luck.
Well, two answers. And let me first address something that's in the premise of your question. We don't think, and we would not agree, that the legislature's purpose and in enacting the whistleblower statute was to encourage reporting. We don't believe you can find that in the statute. We believe the legislature's purpose is much more limited. It's only to protect employees who actually are engaged in whistleblower activity as defined by the statute.
Well, I'll accept that.
Okay.
I don't know, but it doesn't really change the issue of my question. Why should it only protect employees who run first to an outside official and not somebody who tries to go through their chain of command?
Well, we think that the structure of the statute shows that the legislature has expressed a preference for external reporting, and the legislature should be assumed to have balanced the competing interests and weighed the various policy considerations. There are some policy considerations, several in fact, for encouraging going outside.
Your arguments are both that the language is absolutely clear in the statute, so you're right. Maybe just humor somebody who doesn't see it that clearly.
All right.
We have to look at the purpose, it seems to me, apart from that language to decide what the preference is.
Right.
Because I think it could be read rationally either way.
So some of the purposes, I'll give you some. Channeling employees outside the agency would increase the likelihood that the alleged violation will be taken seriously and corrected expeditiously. Another reason would be that it would protect against possible cover-up by an employer when the report concerns that employee. Another reason could be that it ensures for external reporting. The legislature should be assumed to have balanced the competing interests and weighed the various policy considerations. There are some policy considerations, several in fact, for encouraging going outside.
Your arguments are both that the language is absolutely clear in the statute, so you're right. Maybe just humor somebody who doesn't see it that clearly. We have to look at the purpose. Seems to me, apart from that language, to decide what the preference is.
Right.
Because I think it could be read rationally either way.
So some of the purposes, I'll give you some. Channeling employees outside the agency would increase the likelihood that the alleged violation would be taken seriously and corrected expeditiously. Another reason would be that it would protect against possible cover-up by an employer when the report concerns that employee. Another reason could be that it ensures that a report is made to those persons who know the law and are qualified to handle a particular complaint. For example, here, TxDOT's not qualified to look into DWI violations. I have a couple other policy reasons, if the court would permit me.
I'm taking notes.
This would also serve to protect the identity of a whistleblower who wishes to remain anonymous. It would also tend to decrease the likelihood of retaliation if you go outside. And another purpose would be that it could protect against frivolous claims by unscrupulous employees who may report alleged violations of law to get the drop on their employer. In other words, if the unscrupulous employee discovers that his employer is legitimately considering an adverse employment action against him, he could attempt to immunize himself by dropping a bogus whistleblower report on the employer.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first cause. We'll take a brief recess.